Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Today, we are joined by Annetta Winimko, Portfolio Manager of Fidelity Global Consumer Industries Fund for Canadian investors. Annetta will discuss the new global consumer landscape, where consumer spending is taking place, and how that might change following the vaccine rollout. Annetta explains to host Pamela Ritchie that people across the globe will want to get out and socialize as soon as they can after spending a lot of time indoors over the last year. Annetta says her process for the fund is all about trying to understand consumers, the way they think and spend their time and money. So, for investing, Annetta thinks that businesses that allow consumers to go out and enjoy an experience will thrive. Thanks to the vaccine rollout, things are coming back to life, but also consumers have developed different habits over the last year. So, according to Annetta, this all leads to a big opportunity right now for stock pickers and stock selection. Today's podcast was recorded on March 16th, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
A massive spending boom, one that the expectation for the latter half of this year and into next year continues to grow in expectations as countries continue on their path to herd immunity. But one of the big questions is, will a consumer who emerges out of the pandemic actually be quite different to the one that entered it a year ago? Perhaps with different values, lifestyles, preferences, and more savings. Joining us today to discuss trends and opportunities that she's seeing across the consumer space is Portfolio Manager Annetta Winimko. Annetta manages the Fidelity Global Consumer Industries Fund for Canadian investors. Globally, she manages a similar fund and a demographics fund. Warm welcome back to you, Annetta. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us.
I mean, it's hard to believe it is a year ago. There are lots of headlines discussing this right now from sort of the consumer investment perspective. What reflections have you got that you might share with us?
Oh, it has been a long year.
You must be tired.
The longest year in our memory. It really is exactly almost a year ago when economies, US, most of Europe started to go into lockdowns. And now slowly but surely we are all emerging and all coming back to life. And obviously that creates opportunities. A lot has changed, because that has lasted so long. Consumers have developed new habits. Apparently, it takes only a few weeks to develop new habits, and we have been in this for a year. So obviously, things will be different, and they might be better as well from different perspective. Maybe from the perspective of the environment, things will play out better globally. So I'm optimistic about what the future holds, but also happy that we are getting to the end of this disaster that has been social, economic, on many different lines of business.
Absolutely, and we'll dig into a number of those different lines of business today. One question I wanted to just ask you with the discussion of a reopening trade, which I think most people believe, you know, the stock market certainly has been in a reopening mode for some time. Again, from sort of the consumer stocks that you look at, that you invest in, where are we in this reopening trade, if that's what you'd like to call it? Are we halfway through, for instance? It's been brought forward. How do you look at the timing of this?
Yes, obviously everyone knows that. I think the market has bought lots of reopening plays with a very kind of broad brush. And some of the companies that maybe we expect to do well and fully come back with their business might not be doing so well because the behavior has changed and maybe their business will not be as robust anymore. And there are some other companies that maybe have become better businesses because they have established a direct relationship with the consumer. Or maybe the spending habits have changed permanently and consumers will be spending more of their income on their products. So really it's an opportunity for investors, for stock pickers, and those that look very closely at what's really happening on the ground.
And so let's talk about some of those trends and a more direct relationship with the consumer. I mean, I can sort of think of examples in my life where the middleman, if it's the mall or the shopping center or even the store and the, you know, the local franchise or whatever, that you don't need to go to because you just order online and it comes from whatever their central place is. That's probably worked for a number of brands, but it's also probably not worked for a number of brands. Is that fair to say? To what extent do you look at that?
Yes, I do think a lot about that. And I think as consumers, we have a need to get out, to see people, to socialize, to be surrounded by people. And everyone will want to do that. Unfortunately, some of the businesses have been in such a distress that they had to cut costs. Some of the shops will not be as exciting as maybe we can expect them to be. And that really will make people go back to their home and say, what's the point going to the shops if there's no availability and I can get things more conveniently online? But I think the e-commerce business, the strong presence of e-commerce business is here to stay, and this will continue. But the companies and the companies, the retailers, the service providers that can give us something more, something to really go out and enjoy, will benefit. Also because a lot of businesses sadly had to close down, so there's maybe less availability. Especially when it comes to services and the opportunities to socialize and enjoy, let's say, a nice dinner out. Many of the restaurants have closed down, but those who survived, they will be able to enjoy pretty stronger business and more demand for their services.
How do you invest in food and beverage? How does that work? Because obviously these, generally speaking, are public companies, just to sort of give us the universe of where you're looking. It's it wouldn't be, you know, a single owner restaurant or that kind of thing.
I would gladly invest in some of the amazing single owner restaurants, but unfortunately not possible. And a lot of the chains, they have been fully rolled out, or there are maybe issues with quality of what they do. In the fund, I've been an investor in companies like Starbucks or Chipotle for a long time. And I believe their execution has been strong going into the pandemic and has continued to be very strong. And they are beneficiaries of what's happening. But there's also a group of companies that sell products into those channels. So let's say, for example, spirits makers, companies like Pernod or Campari with their Aperol spritz that will most likely be quite successful this summer. So there's a number of companies that give us the exposure to the food and beverage trade and the on trade, meaning the consumption on site as opposed to consumption at home, that I think will be seeing quite a renaissance once it's possible.
Everyone wants to eat clean these days. Are there ways of investing in so-called sort of green eating? Well, I guess it's not so much green eating, but much more sustainable farming. And I mean, how do you play that?
I am looking for opportunities to play that, but unfortunately, it's not so easy. Because to be honest, the best, most sustainable food is what we could grow in our gardens or what we could buy from the farmers and farmers markets. But a leading company in the food industry, Nestle, really is quite advanced in terms of the sustainability measures that they take, to the extent that they actually try to help the farmers that sell to them pick the seeds that are going to give them the best yield and most sustainable. So it's really quite advanced in terms of supply chain. They have set very, very aggressive and great from the humanity point of view targets in terms of reducing emissions and making the packaging and the products more sustainable. But unfortunately, a lot of smaller players in the food industry are not living up to that standard, and they are kind of trying to survive by maybe cutting corners, making, and but the consumer is very aware of that, and the consumer is choosing kind of more simple, more sustainable products coming directly from the source. So the food industry, it's not the easiest industry to find ways to invest sustainably.
Will consumers, I mean, I think they do already, you know, organic food costs more money, but will the consumer pay up for everything from seeds through a supply chain that come along through the system and make their way to, I guess, Nestle? Is there a price that people will pay? Do you know that will work?
That is a good question. And it's an issue which I actually discussed just today, not with a food company, but with the CEO of Adidas. And obviously they are investing big time into sustainable shoes made from ocean plastic. And obviously as a shareholder in the company, I have great interest in what they are doing. And he says, well, when consumers are asked in surveys, they are going to say, yes, we are willing to pay more because they are good people. No one wants to think of themselves as stingy people that don't want to spend money to help the environment. But when it comes to spending and real money, the truth is people are not willing to pay more. So the leading companies, the companies which have kind of their ducks in order, though, those are spending on sustainability because they know it is cost of staying in business. It's cost of getting consumer buy the product. And that gives them a way to do better than maybe smaller companies that are struggling because these are big investments. There are the supply chain. It's very hard also as an investor. I am looking for companies that come up with sustainable materials. And I managed to find a few of them, and I have small positions because they are all in very early stage of product development, whether it's sustainable cloth or sustainable plastics. But it's still all kind of in very early stages of manufacturing and scaling and more expensive.
Very interesting how you see this early on, though. And as you say, it's a trend that I guess companies will adjust to and have to find a way to sort of get there. Tell us a little bit about sort of just the pricing power that you've noticed. Or I mean, I'm curious about us saving. We talk a lot about how much savings there are right now. I wonder how you look at that, and then sort of coupled with the pricing power of the products that you think we probably will gravitate towards. Do we want to spend our savings right now?
Yes, the savings. Our economist has recently told me that she estimates that there's 1.4 trillion of excess savings just in the United States. So it's a huge amount. And that is even before the additional help coming from the government is hitting the accounts just this week. It's obviously a huge amount of savings. And still the opportunities to spend, these savings has been quite limited. And it's interesting to see that the willingness or the desire to book holidays is very high. And we've seen that in the UK, that the moment the government said that from the 12th of April, people can book or go on holidays, everyone has rushed to the website and websites have crashed because everyone was trying to book something. And obviously I've been late and I have now a book.
You're out of luck.
So I think this is universal. This is going to happen. And I think pricing power will appear and those that will realize that they have the scarce goods that everyone wants will be able to increase pricing. We have actually asked that question to the CFO of Airbnb in a call last week. Have you seen pricing going up? And what he said is that not yet, that they have seen higher pricing because of mix, because the higher properties have been booking more successfully, higher priced properties, but not yet like for like. But I suppose the moment people realize that there is big demand for, let's say, lodging, pricing will go up. So I think services is going to see quite an inflation, because I think we all have similar desires in terms of going on holiday, as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Where would you go first if you know you could go in a month or two?
Oh, I would love to go on the sea somewhere and far away from England.
Somewhere with a beach. Sounds good to me. You know, other countries, as you well know, have either ruled out the vaccine faster, Israel, or they're in a situation where they did such an effective job locking down and stopping the spread. So Australia, China. What do you notice there and what might you like to invest in there? They're at a different point, I guess.
They are. So Israel is maybe a very interesting place to look at because they have gone through lockdown and the virus and now opening thanks to vaccination. And it's interesting what I hear from companies. So talking to Revolve, which sells kind of going out clothing, mostly to women. They have seen very strong business, 50% growth year on year in Israel and in Australia, because people just are planning parties and planning to go out. And obviously the wardrobe has not been updated for a year now. So that's a bit of a comeback. Even watching the fashion shows, there's much more kind of maximalist glitter, maybe. People are hoping or preparing for the roaring 20s. I think it's just desire to change our reality and have a bit of fun.
Yeah, more color. Maybe we've been very minimalistic, and that would be interesting to see work attire changing. What will we wear to work in sort of the years to come?
Well, that is a good question, and I think. Even within Fidelity today, we got a message that we are moving to flexible working, and it's going to be discussed different levels of companies, but overall, the management wants people to combine working from home with working from the office. And when you do that, I think office needs to become or feel a bit more like home, because you don't want to have such big difference between okay, I wear sweatpants at home and then I need to dress up to go to the office. It will feel a bit like maybe playing some kind of in a theater. In the office, I look different towards while I'm still working. So I think those two places will combine naturally, because if it's work and I see my colleagues on Zoom and they see me in my jumper, well, I dressed up a bit today, but normally I would be in a jumper. So I think the casual way of dressing, that will stay, comfortable shoes, kind of more casual dressing. But at the same time, when we go to a party, when we are seeing friends, I think people will want to go a bit crazy and really dress up. So I think anything boring, so I don't know, suit and tie, I think it's completely out. It's just way too boring to put it on. But a nice fancy jacket, going with some nice trousers, I think that's what we are going to see men show up in the office in.
Right. Oh, well, we'll go to an art gallery one day, or you know, have to wear something that looks like not what we've been wearing right now. I want to get to the point of inflation, which you know, I think a lot of people, again, we're noticing it in our grocery bills probably, and we're noticing it in different places. It's clearly a huge discussion that has to do with the amount of money sloshing around. How do you look at it for the companies that you are investing in? They have supply chains that they have to deal with that could be inflated.
Yes, the inflation is obviously the question of the day, or maybe question of the year. And I think a lot about that. And obviously, COVID has created lots of bottlenecks in terms of availability of resources, labor, transportation, and that has been inflationary. But there are also bigger things happening, the technology and automation that also had quite a big step up, because companies have realized they need to become more efficient, maybe less dependent on labor and more dependent on robots. So there are those two forces. And the long-term force is deflation, right? And I think we are living through a bit of an inflation spike that is caused on one hand by the bottlenecks and on the other hand, the monetary stimulus that we have combined with fiscal. So I think we have to just accept that this is the case for this year. The central banks seem to have accepted and they are kind of holding tight and not reacting to the numbers that will really get higher as we go. And I think it really does come back in terms of investing and looking at companies' pricing power. Do you have the pricing power to offset the cost inflation? Do you have the efficiencies that will allow you to benefit from some pricing? A little bit of inflation is really good for the stock market. Looking at historic PE multiples, they stayed at 20-25 when inflation runs 2-4%. The problem is if we get into higher inflation, and this is when financial assets derate, because obviously the cost of money is going up.
That's often what we don't know until we're in it, sort of thing. So consumer trends, do you expect them to last, or will they have sort of a pop and then come down a bit, which I think you addressed there. The second question, can you speak to the influence of young consumers, Annetta, and how they buy? Is it based on their values? Some insight there that you could share?
Yes, I think the whole move to sustainability, the way companies have bought into sustainability, it really has started with the youngest consumers and the surveys they've been making. And also, even the employees they are choosing, the Generation Z is really very focused on the environment. It's actually one of the top priorities for them in terms of thinking about their future. And rightfully so. I mean, without the planet, no one has any future. So the young generation, I think, are absolutely instrumental in that, and we had some fantastic young leaders leading that process. But I think today everyone really believes in what they say, especially the kind of good companies that had invested in really strong brands. I think when I speak to them, it really is genuine. They genuinely talk about sustainability, partially because their own employees are putting pressure on management, and they don't only want to deliver higher sales or profits. They want to deliver things that are maybe more intangible, but critical for our future.
When you watch all of the very, very interesting sort of maneuvers and setups to have basically better reporting that have to do with ESG, all kinds of companies are being asked sort of how they stack up in different types of accounting measures and, you know, reporting. Does that work very well for, again, the companies that you're trying to see pull ahead? I'm sort of curious how far in the process you think we are and how quickly that all comes together.
So the European companies have been ahead because maybe a bit of due to regulation, very often also family ownership and very long-term thinking in terms of how to preserve the business for the next generation. So those companies have been doing that for much longer, and maybe now they have become more outspoken. The US companies are more lagging when it comes to sustainability. Some of them have been pretty amazing in terms of what they are doing. The likes of Starbucks or Nike have really been thinking about that for a while, or even Apple. But there's the whole number of companies where they kind of try still to tick the boxes and just get the MSCI rating. Myself, I depend much more on the ratings by our analysts. So each of our analysts, on top of having a fundamental rating, whether it's a buy or a sell, they also have an ESG rating. And this ESG ratings that we apply are much more forward thinking. They are much more, where is the company moving in terms of the strategy? Is it becoming a better business for all the stakeholders in the future as opposed to what it is today? And we are maybe less obsessed with kind of ticking boxes and much more involved in the dialogue with companies and making sure that together we are going on this journey of improving the outcome.
I have it in my notes to ask about boxes, but you just said ticking boxes, so it reminded me to ask. But the idea of packaging, is that something that's being quite seriously discussed? I mean, if you do order Adidas shoes or anything. They do typically come in a box, you know, and then you have a box you have to recycle or reuse. Does all of that get discussed quite seriously by companies? I mean, to what extent is it still a huge part of their marketing, I guess?
Yes, no, that is because obviously with e-commerce, the problem is packaging, the problem is delivering the goods and the emissions involved in that. And there are solutions globally. There's also another company that I have invested in Poland. It's called InPost. And the business of that company is basically setting up lockers in places like close to a tube station or somewhere else where people come and go. And it's basically much more efficient to deliver products to a locker and also pick the returns from a locker. And also here you can put the packaging. And the packaging can be picked up by the delivery company. So I think there are solutions and there are ways of doing that. And I think the likes of Amazon will have to go that way as well. Consumers will demand it.
One day the sort of the truck delivery of everything will be really questioned. That's fascinating. It's such an interesting side of things. What would be what you'd really sort of like people to come away with when they're thinking about this fund, when they're thinking about the way you're looking at the world and really the world, you know, as it comes into clearer focus in the next few months and years, what sort of the piece of information you want to leave with investors?
I think for me, the fund has always been about trying to understand consumers and the way they think, how they spend their time and money. And because of COVID, but also because of lots of maybe environmental issues, the consumers have become very aware of the big problems, of the big issues that we have. And the consumers have become much more discerning and much more demanding. And also technology allows us to find all the information and see who is telling the truth and who is just advertising. So I think the message of the fund is just trying to be true to what the consumers are really doing. And when you look at what they are doing, it's quite clear and they are quite clear and strong trends. And the beauty of our world today is that thanks again to technology, trends are global. So the scale of these trends creates really interesting investment opportunities because of the size of global consumption. As we all know, consumption is the basis of 60-70% of GDP in most economies. So it really is quite a big investment opportunity at the end of the day.
Good to know what we're consuming and then obviously invest in it. Thank you so much, Annetta, for painting a fascinating picture of where we go from.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts, and don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again. See you next time.